to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
So, I always see you have the most interesting meals. What'd you eat today?
This morning, I've had a banana. I always start my day with a banana and then with a green smoothie.
Really? What do you put in your green smoothie?
Spinach, celery, often green capsicum, spirulina powder or broccoli sprout powder, depending on which one I feel like. Coconut water, cinnamon, cacao, and my other favorite thing to put in it is, people think it's really weird, but I put a raw egg in my smoothies.
Really? Well, the protein. But, you know, in all honesty, some of the things that you said would give me a boatload of gas. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, too. Really, I mean, I tried the celery juice. You know, people were on the celery juice kick. So I said, I'll try it. It was absolutely mortifying. I couldn't stand it. The cacao, it kind of gives me, you know, bloating. And it's different for everyone. So we're going to talk about that. Braze, we're going to talk about that with a clinical nutritionist from South Australia. Woo-hoo! That right there. Okay, Braze. That is Mary Ann Bennett. She's the business. She works in the area of nutrition, but she also studies genetics. So we're going to talk about that because, again, the genetics are very different based upon your age, your ethnicity, and a whole source of other things. She is the mother of four. And the grandmother of four. I'm so jealous. I want some grandkids. So we're going to talk about that and a whole lot more. Welcome to The Edge, Mary Ann Bennett.
Thank you, April. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Well, I'm so glad to have you along with all of the other wonderful South Australians. I have just gotten so much information from you guys. As I said, there's a vortex. There's something going on down there in South Australia that is resonating and swirling. Up from that root chakra to the rest of the world, because you guys seem to get it. You're really into spirituality. You're really into nutrition. You're doing great when it comes to this COVID mess. Tell my Brains where it all began for you and why did you select the area of nutrition?
Well, it all started with me because I got diagnosed with fibromyalgia in 2010. And I spent quite a few years going back and forth to doctors, specialists, went down the conventional medical route. And the only solution that those doctors had for me was medication. And when I asked a doctor what else I could do, what was a specialist, he said to me there wasn't anything. He said, live with it for the rest of your life. And I went, well, maybe not. But I tried acupuncture, I tried seeing a naturopath. And what it enlightened me about was that there was more to the human body than I actually really knew. And if I was going to learn, is going to heal, I had to learn to heal myself. So I was driving along. It's really a bizarre story, but I was driving along one day because I spent 30 years doing cleaning people's houses, cleaning people's businesses. And, you know, part of the reason why I got sick, but I was driving along to one of my cleaning jobs one day. I heard an advert on the radio for a natural health university, come and study nutrition, learn about the human body. And I went, oh, I was intrigued. So I went along, and it was only a couple of days later, I went along to that open day and I was hooked. I had listened to someone talk about how amazing the human body was and how it could heal itself. And I literally signed up on the day. That happened 2 weeks before I turned 50. So I enrolled in uni and started at uni the year I turned 50. And that was 2014. So fast forward to 2021. I've studied nutrition because you know what? The basis of all health is what we put into the body.
I know. And I am going through something. That's why I'm listening to all of you guys right now, is that I really have to make a transformation. Yeah. I do. I didn't think at first I was stress eating, but I've had some things, you know, going on in my personal life, Yes, brains, I go through it too. And, you know, every time I go past the refrigerator, I grab something. And I really didn't think about it. And so now I have to think about it, because when I got on the scale, it told me about it. The hardest thing I think people have when it comes to, I don't like to call it a diet, I like to call it a live it. Mm-hmm. Okay, because it is a lifestyle change and it's the way that we have to live. Is number one, breaking the old habits and, you know, exploring new foods. Now, we were talking about your smoothie, for example. And being disciplined. What are some of the challenges that you find when working with a brand new client that comes in all fluffy and discombobulated?
Well, I guess everyone who comes to me believes that they're ready to make those diet changes. And the sad reality is that at least 50 to 60% of them will go away and come back and have done none of the things, or done none of the changes and made the changes. Because making change is hard when habits have been lifelong. Because now, I've recently just done hypnotherapy certification, because part of the problem with, you know, getting people to change habits is their mindset. So those habits have become set in their subconscious. They've been doing them for years. So then we change it. So because, you know, health starts with your food, but it's about the whole body, and your mind can be a big control of that, as can your genes. You know, that's another topic. So, yeah, it's about getting them to actually it's sometimes it's just accessing the unconscious mind and getting, you know, putting those messages, you know, and making them realize that what that comfort eating that you talk about, April, is something you do subconsciously without even really thinking about it. Right. It just becomes.
You're right. You just, you know, grab a cookie. You don't grab one, you grab three. Because the first one you're eating when you're grabbing the other two, you know? Yeah. And so, what I have to say to myself is that, April, you know what? Number one, just don't buy it.
Yes, that's a very good tip. Here's the tip. If it's not in the cupboard or not in the fridge, you can't eat it.
Right. But there's plenty in the cupboard and in the fridge.
Yes, that's it.
And, you know, and I'm sitting here and I'm having, you know, and it's a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. It's a sacrifice. But I have to ask myself, am I worth it?
Absolutely. Are you worth it?
Am I worth it? Because, again, diabetes and heart disease runs rampant in my family. So let's get on the subject of genetics. Now, you know, I don't know how many African-American women you've worked with, American African-American women that you've worked with, but I'm telling you, we can get down with some fat and some cholesterol and some greasy foods. We, you know, it's our culture. It's comfort food. We call it soul food. But these things can be made, you know, instead of using lard and grease, you can use other things, chicken broth and chicken stock. Where do I begin, Marianne? Where do I begin to, you know, think back? Because I know it's cultural and I know it's genetic. How do I begin to change?
Well, I guess that is it. Is it when you're looking at genes that everyone's genetic makeup is individualized, and what your ancestry is, so what your ethnicity is, does have an impact. I mean, in Australia, we have a huge Indigenous population, so the Indigenous population that have significantly different health and significantly more health issues than what you know, the rest of the Caucasian population do. I've definitely, you know, we have a large Chinese population. We have a large, Muslim. One of my clients is Muslim. So you have to look at their genetic predisposition, what they're predisposed to, and look at their genes individually and work out, you know, what is the best diet and lifestyle for them. And when it comes to food, you really can make an individualized recommendations based on what their genetic profile you see in their genetic profile, because, you know, I do the whole genetic testing to look at what their predisposition is and how it is because what women come with me, and you know, 90% of my clients are women, they already have chronic health issues. So what they're looking to do is find the answers to those chronic health issues, like I was, and to actually be able to have a diet individualized. So they have their food and nutrition individualized for their genes and for their culture.
Yeah. And so now you are a clinical nutritionist. Tell me what that means.
Basically, I work in a clinically looking from at the body from a whole perspective. So I went to my university studies made me a clinical nutritionist. So I got a Bachelor of Health Science in Nutrition and Dietetic Medicine. Mm-hmm. So I use that, and then when we look at the area of food has an impact on every single part of the body. But we also look at lifestyle. We look at lifestyle and the underlying reasons why people can be chronically ill. So when you look at clinical for me means looking across the whole picture of a person's health, not just what they're eating, because right. Your health is much more than just what you're eating.
Right. And I've been watching you. Oh, yes.
I'm watching you.
Okay. You get your workout every day.
Yes.
How much emphasis do you put on exercise?
Exercise is about movement for me. I mean, I love going to the gym and working out. I love going to the gym. And, you know, one of the things that my gym offers is yoga. I do a yoga 4 times a week. Exercise shouldn't be stressful for the body. It should be relaxing, but movement is about keeping the body active. So when you're moving, your blood's flowing, your blood flows better, your heart gets stronger, your muscles get stronger. So it's more about looking after the body in doing gentle. The best exercise that anybody can do is just to go for a walk, and that's what I recommend. Just go out, you know, do it a little bit of time. Just walk, or if you're tired, just go for a walk around your backyard. Do that a couple of times a day. If you can't manage an hour, do 5 minutes, do 10 minutes at a time. It's about just keeping moving. It's not being one of those. In here in Australia, we have sedentary people. We call them couch potatoes because they don't get up off
the couch. We call them here too. Couch potatoes. You know, I get out and I do that, because when you go for a walk, it's not just the physical exercise, but it's the fresh air. It's, you know, what you observe.
Yes.
Even if it's in your own neighborhood, you know, it's the birds, the sound of the birds and the trees. It's very relaxing for your mind. You know, you had shared with me that you had, you know, a challenging life before you had fibromyalgia. Would you care to share any of that with women that might be struggling?
I mean, I grew up in a family of 6 kids. My mother was a single parent, so we didn't have a lot of money. So I had no ambition to go to university or go to school, even complete high school. And I was one of the statistics back then. In the statistics in the 1970s was 1 in 3 teenage girls would end up pregnant. Well, that was me. So at 17, I had my first child. So life is tough. So, you know, I've done it tough. I've brought up my kids. I've worked a lot of hours. I've worked a job that didn't pay me a lot of money. So it meant I, you know, in order to pay the bills and feed my kids, I just had to work a lot of hours. But hard work, it's what I saw my parents. It's what I saw my dad do. But I lost my dad really young, and realised that working hard was going, he used to say, you know, hard work never killed anyone, but realistically it did for him. And when I got diagnosed with fibromyalgia, what I realised was, my job was killing me. It was the toxicity from the chemicals, the stress, the bad. And back in those days, I didn't eat healthy. You know, I drank lots of alcohol because I had to have a way of coping with stress. I would eat when I was hungry, or by the time I got home from work, fed my kids, did the housework, and had to contemplate getting out of bed again in 5 hours. I didn't have the energy to eat. I'd have a cup of coffee and I'd go to bed, or I'd have a glass of wine to put me to sleep and I'd go to bed. So life was tough. But you know what? I never gave up. My drive was always my kids, until my kids left home and then my health crashed. And I went, oh my God, I was only 45 years old. Like, the doctor says to me, live with it for the rest of your life. And I said, no, you know, there is more to life than that. But it nothing, you know, I see people that have tough lives and it keeps them down. I guess I always had that there was something else. Like I did when my health crashed, there's got to be a way to get better. And now that's what I do for other people. I give them hope. I give them that hope that just because they've had a chronic disease for 5 minutes, 5 years, or 10 years, it is possible to actually recover your health. And for some people, we have to look at their genes because that's the underlying reason why they're sick, that they aren't working and eating and living to in relation to how their genes tell them they should.
You do that. You do this genomic testing through blood. You know, you extract blood.
It's actually saliva testing. So just the old swab on there. You might see on the crime shows. I have to say, April, I'm a huge fan of the American crime, you know, crime and forensic shows.
Unfortunately, it is real life. Yeah, I know. United States, you know, they're taking those shows and they're basing them off real life experiences, because here is really ridiculous. I was talking to somebody else from Australia and from London about the ability to own a gun. You guys can have guns there, but there's very strict rules.
Yes.
You know, here you can have an automatic assault weapon. So it's crazy. It's crazy. But you know what? We're going to get through. We're going to make it through.
Yeah, it's just like you see in the when they're trying to find a murderer. You just swab the insides of your cheeks. We send it off. Takes about 4 weeks to get the results back, and it gives us a huge amount of information on everything from what food you should eat, from your risk of heart disease or having hormone disorders or mental health disorders. It's amazing what you can see in your genes. And what I often find, though, is what a client comes to me with, like what they've already told me, is just like putting the pieces of a puzzle together. So I look at genes as the missing piece of the puzzle for most people. That's that piece. They've looked at all, they've put all the other things together, but they really haven't done their genes. And when you slot that piece in, it just makes everything else make sense, why they're sick, and what then we work out what we can do for them. And it can be quite life-changing
here in the United States, what I've noticed through my healthcare provider, what they do is they send you to a dietitian. Then they send you to a dietitian and you go through all these classes. Then they want to put you on a liquid fast, you know? Yeah, I mean, and you know, that may not be what you need. To add this component of having, you know, your genes tested as well, I think is so valuable. Again, because it tells down to the cellular level of what's going on. I have scheduled to get my first colonic. And I was at first, well, I had went to this one place and it was very nerve-wracking. When I went in there, I didn't feel very comfortable. But then when I thought about it, it's no more than a little bit longer warm enema, I would imagine. Yeah. And so again, if you have to reset your body, the best thing you could probably do is start with a cleanse. Mm-hmm. Do you think?
Yeah. I actually quite know a lady who runs a colonics business. It's called Bottoms Up Colonics.
That's cute. I like that.
I send my clients to them because often, you know, they've had that toxic waste, you know, it might move, but stuff gets stuck to the outside and it gets stuck in there for a long time. It can cause long-term health issues. So the best way to get kickstart your health is go and have a good old colonic, and then, yeah, you can actually, it's amazing. I haven't actually had one for probably 12 months, but because, you know, her clinic was closed for the most of the last year. But
right.
It's amazing. I tried not to look at the stuff that was coming out, but it's hard not to when you're in the health field. And it makes you feel so much freer.
I know my friend said that, you know, her vision was clear. Her skin was clear. She said she just felt, you know, just like a weight had been lifted up off of her because of all of this toxicity. And people fail to realize that it's not just the food that you eat. It's, again, the air that you breathe, it's the topicals that we put on our skin that are toxic as well. The shampoo, the hair color, all of these things are toxins that are seeping into the core of our body.
Yeah.
So now let's talk a little bit about, you know, the work that you do with your clients with regards to resetting that. Okay, so they've now come to you, you figured out what the missing pieces are, they've had the colonic. Where do they go from there?
The first thing we look at, I look at three areas with people. Obviously, we look at their genes first, then we look at lifestyle. When I think of lifestyle, I think of, you know, sleep, you know, how are they sleeping? You know, people take sleep for granted because they think it's just something the body does, but it isn't. It's the body's ability to, you know, to rest and recover and restore. I look at you know, their stress. You know, their stress. People have different ideas of what stress is. For me, what I call stress is that need to be constantly on the go. And there's a term. There's a lady who wrote a book. It's called Rushing Woman Syndrome. You need to, if you haven't read it, April, you need to read it. It talks about how we are always on the go, and we lock on that fight flight response. And then I talk to people about their environment. So just as you mentioned before, one of the very first things we look at is what is their toxic load. So people are exposed. What are they exposed to in their environment at home? So what sort of cleaning comp products, what sort of personal care products are they using? Do they have I don't know about the water in America, but here they chlorinated, and chlorine is so, and put fluoride in, it is so bad for you. What's the air quality? Do you have mold in your house? What's your, you know, do you actually, when you think about environment, how often do you get outside? Because, you know, sunshine and fresh air is vital for the human body. And then we look at, then of course it goes down to, we look at their food and their diet and what they're eating, and how we can use the food that they eat to actually work directly with their genes. There's a component of genetic science called nutrigenomics. It's basically the impact that the food you eat can have on how your genes function. So looking at food from that, having that very cellular impact on your body. And then obviously if you, people with chronic inflammation, what can you eat for chronic inflammation? The best thing you can eat for chronic inflammation is green leafy vegetables, or, you know, add some turmeric to your smoothie, you know, make a good curry. So it's using those foods to directly impact the genes that you know those people have, that can, you know, and can make a significant change. So because when you can switch your gene on and it can help deal better with inflammation.
Yeah. I know, like ginger, you know, mm-hmm. That instead of making, you know, a tea bag, I just take a big lump of ginger, some boiling water, a little bit of lemon, you know, but this extracting sugar, the sweet poison. I know. And it is so addicting. Sugar. Now, I've gotten away from salt. I used to do, you know, two or three different salts, and not thinking about there's a garlic salt, there's a, you know, there's a seasoning salt, and no. So we have one, but sugar. And I'm really trying to be more conscious of it. My daughter went on this, 30 day something or other, where she extracted all of this stuff from her diet. Now, she was one evil heifer. She was. But for the most part, she lost about 15 pounds in like 2 weeks. It was amazing. So I'm about to go on my evil journey and see how it's working for me, because sugar is really, and you can taste it immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, once you extract it from your palate. Why is sugar so addicting, do you think?
Well, it's funny. It's not funny. Sugar actually works on the same receptors in the brain as what drugs do. Right. You know, so that's why it's on the same receptors that alcohol and nicotine. It works on the same receptors, and the body gets used to it. And when you don't give it to it, it craves it. But it is at that evil journey. It's like taking me off. I mean, I've been off sugar for probably 10 years. I do have it occasionally, but every now and then I'll have it. I'll go and have a little bit of cake or my favorite chocolate brownie at a cafe, and I take a couple of bites of it, and you know instantly. Yes, it's gluten and dairy free, but it's not sugar free, and you go, "Ooh, that's why I don't eat sugar." So yeah, it is very addictive, but the only way you can do it is to get off of it, because the problem is if you're eating lots of, you know, it's in sauces and packet food and cakes and chips and things you don't think. It's in ice cream and mayonnaise. It's in everything here. I assume in America it is, because it's here in Australia. But it's a matter of knowing what it is. So if you have to, if you want a sweetener, I always recommend get some natural raw honey. I mean, we're lucky in South Australia. We have lots of local beekeepers. So just go and get some raw honey, some really nice maple syrup, and just use it in moderation. You know, don't use that raw, you know, that processed white stuff, because what we call it white death. In the nutrition industry, we call sugar white death.
And in China, they call it sweet poison. I was there in Beijing, and it was strange because the waitress came and our driver, you know, he ordered everyone a Coca-Cola, and I said, no, thank you. She says, oh, you're the first American that has been here that doesn't like soda pop and a lot of that sweet poison. Well, I like the sweet poison. They just didn't have the right one for me. But again, it is very, very toxic, and it is in everything. It was funny when my daughter came to Australia. We had went to Australia about 3 weeks before she went, and then she went with some friends. And she says, Mom, she says, the ketchup. I said, yeah, they don't just give you ketchup like here in the United States. You know, you'll get a burger, whatever, and they'll give you 4 or 5 packs. They gave us one pack of ketchup, and then you had to pay 50 cents for any additional. And so I told her, I said, Chanel, they're not going to give you a lot of ketchup. Do you know that that girl packed her a bottle of ketchup to bring?
Well, that's one way to do it, I suppose.
But I was looking at the ingredients, and I really didn't realize how much sugar was just in ketchup. And if you look at the labels, and that's what I'm doing, I'm learning to read labels, because there's some trickery in reading the labels. The ingredients and the most prevalent ingredients are listed first.
Yes.
What do you see? Salt and sugar. Mm-hmm. But what I don't understand too, and what I'm learning, is serving sizes. And people have to understand that it is not your determination, but actually a weight and measure of what that is.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the thing is that they'll tell you how much sugar is in a serving size, but the average person doesn't use a serving size when they I mean, in Australia, we call it tomato sauce. We don't call it ketchup. I mean, though the word ketchup has on some of the bottles now, but yes, people just go a big squirt and from a bottle, and yeah, that's just probably 3 times. I mean, the average Australian eats about 20 teaspoons of sugar a day. That's the average. And what's healthy is maybe 1 teaspoon. You know, 1 teaspoon is not going to across a whole day, it's not going to kill you. But if you're having 20 and you're having 20 every day, and some people have more. I mean, you know, the soft drink industry in Australia is booming because people love sugar. And I have to say, I used to love soft drink too, until I realized how bad it was for me and how much sugar was in it. And
I had gotten away from the soft drinks, and then I had, you know, someone bought a 2-liter. I drank it. I felt like somebody stuck an air hose up me. I was just as bloated and belching, and it was awful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what I found too, that as I'm on this journey, getting rid of the bloat first, you know, and not looking at the number, but getting the exercise in, feeling good about yourself, watching your elimination, as you said, sleep. You know, I'm sleep deprived because I'm up with you Australians at 3 o'clock in the morning here in the U.S. But what I've done is my circadian rhythm has really, really been impacted. I know that. As far as fasting, give me your thoughts, because I had another guest on about this intermittent fasting. People are really raving about that, but I have really kind of stopped after 7 o'clock. I don't do anything until 7 o'clock the next day. And then I start with water or warm water to kind of get my digestive system woke up again. What's your feelings on fasting?
Fasting can be very good for the body. And certainly not eating at nighttime, I always recommend to my clients, unless you're absolutely starving. You see, that it also comes down to your genetic predisposition. Some people actually can't sleep if they are hungry at nighttime. So it's not about what eating at night, it's about what you're eating at night. But what I believe is that your metabolism needs to be kick-started in the morning. So it's all right to fast overnight. So if you're a person that has dinner at 6 or 7 o'clock and you can go until 7 o'clock in the morning without eating, that's fantastic. But you should eat within 60 minutes of getting up. I always have my banana as soon as I get up in the morning and usually have my smoothie within an hour and a half in the morning.
Okay. And the body is regulated. People don't think about this too. When you eliminate and how many times you eliminate. You know, I was reading a book, and it's a really good book. I can't think of the name of it right now, but it suggests that you eat fruit before you consume a meal, because the enzymes in the fruit really kind of get your digestive system working and help you eliminate foods that you process. But processing this meat, I'm telling you, I'm really trying to work on that. I'm trying to learn how to cook some shiitake mushrooms and things that have that same density as meat, you know, or some great tofu recipes that can take on any flavoring that I put with it, because meat is killing us. All the pesticides that they're putting into them, the animals are getting sick, the antibiotics, you know, and then you have to consider that this animal has been dead at least 2 weeks before it gets to us on our plate, and there we go cooking it again. You know, it's rough. It is. And I enjoy meat. I do. But I tell my mother and them, there can't be that many chickens in the world. It's just, I mean, everything is a chicken. And sometimes I look at you know, a chicken leg and I'm like, is this chicken on steroids? The cotton picking thing is this big. I've never seen a chicken with a leg that big. So you have to take consideration, but also the dairy and the eggs. What do you feel about, you know, consuming a lot of meat and dairy products?
Well, I have to say that I believe that dairy should be for cows and not for humans. And it's not an opinion that I've always had, but I had chronic digestive issues. I had chronic constipation and chronic bloating and gas issues until I cut dairy out of my diet. When I cut dairy out of my diet 4 years ago, all of those things, all of those digestive issues disappeared. What you also find when people get their genes tested is that a lot of adults can't digest lactose. Mm-hmm. They can't digest dairy properly. So if you've got it affects the enzyme. So the enzyme that breaks down lactose or dairy in your digestive system is non-existent for about 70% of the adult population. So as a child, you have a small amount of it. And then as you get older, you don't have it. So I don't recommend my clients go off dairy unless they've got chronic inflammation. So there's a reason why they're chronically inflamed. I often do what I call elimination. So we eliminate the foods that are likely to be causing that. Dairy is often, dairy and eggs are often very inflammatory. So it's meat. Meat can be inflammatory, but I love a good steak. I think it's about making sure you know where the meat is coming from. So try and find, you know, it's probably not as easy to do in America, but here, knowing who your local butcher is, we can go here to local farms and they have farm shops, so you can buy chickens and eggs I mean, I'm luckily, I've got a sister who has chickens, so I get fresh chicken eggs all of the time. So it's about the freshness and knowing where they come from. Right. But there is a big issue in Australia, as there is in America, with the amount of hormones that they in the feed that they feed animals, and that can then have an impact on most, especially women, because women have more hormones than men. We see so many more hormonal disorders, especially from women who eat a lot of chicken. And we're finding that we have issues with young girls starting their menstruation like way younger than they normally would, because it's the amount of hormones that they've eaten. Because one of the most popular foods to feed that kids will eat, and it happened to my granddaughter. My granddaughter, oldest granddaughter, was 9 when she started her menstruation. Wow. And the only meat she would eat was chicken. And so whilst there's no actual proof, you look at it and you go, well, and now it's happened to my next granddaughter as well. So you're going, well, it's here.
And so, you can swab your mouth and check your genes.
Yep. So it's a matter of, I don't not recommend any food, but there are certain ones that are inflammatory, and meat and dairy, eggs. The only other one is, if you have issues with your thyroid or hormonal disorders, soy or tofu can have an impact on your health. So that's
the only. I know. When I was going through the change of life, caffeine would take me from a flicker to a flame, Marianne. It was ugly. And yes. I didn't realize how much caffeine is in different things.
Yes.
And soy. So I would go and get my favorite coffee house, and I would get something with soy, and I would just be on that trajectory, right to crazy town.
It's funny you say that, because I've had an issue. I mean, I always say that I've given up a lot of things in my health journey. I've looked at a lot of things that were in my diet that were impacting my health, and I was quite happy to get rid of sugar and dairy and, you know, reduce the amount of meat I'm eating and eating a lot more fruit and vegetables. But caffeine has been my Achilles heel. And for many years I went, oh, I don't have a problem with coffee, but I could go from zero to explosion in like 5 minutes flat without coffee. So I realized that last year after I had a couple of those explosions. Mm-hmm. So I've been monitoring it this year. So I have reduced the amount of caffeine that I take. And, you know, genetically, some people, you can see in their genes, they're either if you're a slow metabolizer of coffee, or you're a fast metabolizer. Someone who is a fast metabolizer of coffee will often drink more coffee because it goes through their system faster. That doesn't mean they should be. It just means those are one of those crazy people that on caffeine are then, you know, wired and can't sleep. So, you know, some of my clients can't have caffeine at all because the caffeine gives them heart palpitations.
Yeah, so, that or, you know, acid reflux. They don't realize those things as well. Well, yes. Let's have a toast to one another.
Toast to coffee in moderation.
Coffee in moderation, and to love and to goodness. Thank you so much, Mary Ann Bennett. You have just been amazing. I have a million questions for you. I'm so glad that I'm recording this because I can go back and watch it.
You can send me all of your questions. I'm quite happy to answer all of them, April. That would be my pleasure.
And I'm so proud of you that you have been able to reconstruct your life, that you went back at a mature age and got your degree. And you have found happiness. You look beautiful. Your skin's beautiful. And you're able to help other women, you know, go through this. Because I'm telling you, this is not an easy journey.
No.
But I have to take the bull by the horn, and I have to ride this sucker because I don't want it riding me, right?
Yeah, well, that's it. Is it, you know, I'm in a... my life is wonderful. You know, I've got children, I've got a wonderful partner now who's retired. So we're very comfortable in retirement. So helping women, you know, reset their health, you know, by looking at their nutrition and their genes is my passion project. And I get so much pleasure out of seeing the difference that it makes to not just them, it's just to their families, and the downstream effect will have long term. because I've got younger and younger women coming to me with those issues. And if I can just help one woman, just one person, recover their health, I've fulfilled my purpose in life.
When you come back, we're going to talk about that person that has reinvented themselves, because I know a lot of women that have lost massive amounts of weight, and now psychologically they're having issues because they don't feel that they're worthy, or they're not adjusted to this, or what other people are saying. So the next time you come back, we're going to talk about that, because you might be talking to me, because all this is going, believe and trust.
See the transformation.
So what I'm going to do though, is I'm going to start one thing at a time. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take my time. And again, I might have to go to Crazy Town with my daughter and extract the sugar, because I know that's the biggest thing, sugar and bread. I love some bread. I do. You know, I love bread. But those carbs, you know, and change from white potatoes to maybe a sweet potato. And I don't have to sweeten it. Because see, we do that in the African-American culture. We have some sweet potatoes, but girl, we got to put some butter and some brown sugar and some vanilla and cinnamon. We got to have candy yams. You just can't have a sweet potato. And I noticed that, you know, the sweet potato was already sweet. So I'm going to try that. So you are sweet as you can be. Tell my brains how to get in contact with you so that they can do deep dive. Maybe they want to, you know, work with you. I don't know how they get their mouth swabbed from other parts of the world to work with you, but you can figure that out.
Well, you know, we the COVID opened up the world to Australia, because we were this little place where no one knew we were here mostly. And you know what? So yeah, I get in contact with me. I'm on Facebook. I've got a Adelaide Nutrition and Wellbeing. I'm on Instagram, on Marianne Bennett, on LinkedIn. You can find me on adelaidenutritionandwellbeing.com.au. And yeah, it's amazing. I'm everywhere and omnipresent. So yeah, just Google me and you'll find me.
Brains, where'd you find her? Where'd you find her? Right here on the edge.
Right here.
That's right. The place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the what? Responses are never dull. Thank you so much, Marianne Bennett. Brains, you know what? It's a struggle. The struggle is real, but you are worth it. And you are the one that's going to have to take control of your health and what you put inside your mouth. It's not your doctor. It's not your lawyer. It's not your banker. It's not your partner. It's all about you. So take care of you. And we're here to help.
Your health is in your hands.
That's right. All hands on deck. Bye, Marianne.
Bye, April.